This is DZPN, the Drunken Zombie Podcasting Network.
Hello and welcome to Lights Out. I'm your host, Sylvia Schultz. We've got an interesting show tonight, as always, so let's get right to it. Let's go, Lights Out. My husband, Rob, has long had the dream of being his own boss, of running his own business. In August 2011, he got his wish when he purchased a bar at Court Street in Pekin. He started in on renovations immediately, spending many late nights in the building, doing painting and repairs so that the cantina would be perfect on opening day. It was at the end of one of these long nights, when he came home and fell into bed, that he told me an interesting bit of news. Oh, by the way, our new bar is haunted. Two of the former owners of the bar had tales to tell of strange noises and even stranger sights. One of the owners spoke of bar stools that would swivel on their own, and a jukebox that would play music at odd times, even when no one had fed it money. Another owner started his story with the flat declaration, "I don't believe in ghosts." But one night after closing, he was standing at the end of the bar, counting the day's take from the cash register drawer, and he heard footsteps behind him. You know how in an old building like this you can feel the floorboards flex as somebody walks across them? I felt that. Boom, boom, boom. I thought maybe I'd left the door unlocked and someone had gotten in after closing. I swung around and came up with my fist cocked, ready to clock somebody. But there was nobody there. One of the former bartenders shared an even stranger story with us. He was behind the bar working one evening when a sharply dressed gentleman came up the stairs and went directly into the men's room. The bartender noted the man's tuxedo suit and top hat, but didn't find it odd, as it was New Year's Eve. The bartender did get concerned when half an hour or so passed, and the gentleman still hadn't come out of the men's room. The bartender went into the restroom to check on his customer and found the tiny room empty. It came as no surprise to us but that our ghost might be a nattily dressed man in a top hat and tails. The building, of which the cantina occupies the second floor, has been through several incarnations, including a post office, a cigar lounge, a gentleman's club, and a meeting hall for both the Knights of Pythias and their ladies' auxiliary, the Pythian Sisters. In the center of the pressed tin ceiling at the cantina is a strange triangular pattern, some sort of sigil worked into the ceiling, the symbol of the Knights of Pythias. And when the fraternity left the building and the next owner started to clean it out, they found a gruesome souvenir, a small casket containing the bones of one of the founders of the Knights. Even though the Brotherhood no longer uses the building for their gatherings, traces of the fraternity still remain. Perhaps some of the members themselves still meet there, too. One evening, a friend of mine stopped by the cantina for a drink. I knew she was a gifted medium, and I noticed that her gaze kept drifting towards the front room. I found this interesting, since other members of my ghost investigation group, Research in Paranormal, had said that they'd gotten weird feelings about the front room and about the hallway connecting the front room to the office in particular. I make no claim to sensitivity myself, but even I got a peculiar feeling in that hallway. I walked with my medium friend to the front room. "Okay, I can tell you're getting something. What can you tell me about this place?" She spoke slowly. A sense of peace suffused her words. "The men like to gather here. They really enjoyed spending time in this front room. This is a meeting place for, not the Masons or Elks, it's the Knights of... Oh, not the Knights of Columbus. It's an unfamiliar name." She moved to the big bay windows at the front of the building. A delighted grin lit her face as she looked down, and she chuckled. "I'm seeing horses and carriages going past on Court Street." After she had finished, I told her what I knew about the place. She nodded. "Knights of Pythias, that was it. You've definitely got at least one of those guys still enjoying this place." She said that Top Hat Guy is a recording, and that's what he does. He gets out of his carriage on Court Street, comes up the stairs, and goes into the men's room. Our door guy, Doug, had his own encounters with whatever entity haunts the bar. He told me that several times, as he has sat at the bar nursing a drink, he has seen some sort of shadow in the mirror behind the back bar, a shadow that appears in the mirror to be several feet behind him. I told Crystal Depew of the Illinois Ghost Seeker Society about the activity at the cantina. So one Sunday when the bar was closed, she and her team came up to do an investigation. One of the neatest things about working with other paranormal investigation groups is seeing what kind of toys each group brings. In addition to the full-spectrum cameras and digital voice recorders, I was introduced to a gadget called a melmeter. This device gives two simultaneous readings, temperature and EMF, electromagnetic frequency measurements. Having this dual readout is very useful in paranormal investigation. Cold spots are a good indicator of a spirit presence. In order to manifest, ghosts need to draw energy from their surroundings. Often this leads to a drop in temperature, the classic cold spot. There's a theory, too, that the presence of a spirit can affect electromagnetic fields in an area. One of the first orders of business in an investigation is to do a walkthrough of the building to note any machines that are giving off electromagnetic energy or the presence of wiring in the walls that may affect the readings gathered with the EMF meters. I met with Crystal and her group outside the back door and let them into the building. Doug was there, too. Given his experiences in the bar, he was eager to join us. Other researchers from IGSS joined us a bit later in the evening. After the team had done the initial walkthrough, they set up a few cameras and voice recorders, and I turned out most of the lights. The cantina was a very peaceful place in the dark. With the only light coming from the old-fashioned sconces on one wall, the rich red of the walls just seemed to glow. The investigators and I decided to start the first EVP session in the men's room. Don't laugh now. That's where a full-bodied apparition has been seen. It was a logical place to start. Jim, Rob, Danielle, and I stood in the tiny men's room. Jim held a DVR, a digital voice recorder, in his hand, and Danielle held an EMF meter. We asked the standard questions. Can you tell us your name? Do you know what year it is? Why are you still here? Hoping to get some sort of answer. Usually, doing an EVP session is like a game of 20 questions, except that it's completely one-sided and actually kind of boring. But every once in a while, something happens during the session that chases the boredom away in a snap. The men's room at the cantina is a tiny room, with dark gray walls and an impossibly tall ceiling. It's at the end of the hallway, and the hallway bends to form the door, not an easy place for sound to travel much. The four of us, two men and two women, stood in the men's room asking questions. After we asked, "Can you tell us your name?" we all heard an improbable sound, a woman's indistinct moan. It was just a snippet of sound, not a drawn-out cry, but we all heard it. We did several more investigative sessions, mostly working with the voice recorders. Doug had the most delightful experience. One of the entities we encountered seemed to like him. He was holding one of the melmeters and getting readings of unnatural cold along with high EMF. The readings changed when he moved the meter, and he finally narrowed his field down to a spot about 3 feet high, just in front of the stage. I held my hand out over the spot Doug had pinpointed. My palm seemed to tingle with a low-grade electric awareness, a tingle that faded when I moved my hand away from that spot. Jim and I sat for a while, along with London Depew, in the office of the cantina, still asking questions, still hoping that some spirit would oblige us in answer. We didn't get any responses, although something strange happened at that point, too. The office area leads into the back hallway. The hallway connects the office area and the front room, where my medium friend spoke with the men at the club that still met in the bar. I'm not the only person who has gotten weird vibes from the back hallway. Doug was still wandering around the main room of the bar, charmed that the entity, according to the Melmeter readings, seemed to be following him. He got as far as the door to the office. Then the meter's EMF readings dropped to zero, and the temperature went back up to normal room temperature. Doug stepped back out, and the entity came back to hover around him. But no matter how Doug encouraged and cajoled, the entity refused to follow him into the office. The meter picked up a presence wherever Doug went in the building, a presence that stopped resolutely at the threshold of the office door. It was getting late, so we wrapped up the investigation. I turned the lights on, the IGSS team collected all their equipment, and they left, thanking us for the opportunity to investigate such an active site. Later, Crystal and Rob shared the results of the investigation with us, including several EVPs. The team decided that the cantina is haunted by an intelligent entity. They think it's a female. They didn't find any evidence of our top-hatted gentleman, but perhaps he was just keeping quiet that evening. Doug swears Top Hat Guy is still there, as he saw the shadow the evening of April 7th during a Whistle Pigs concert. Also, several weeks after the investigation, there was another curious incident at the bar that seems to support the theory that it's a woman who haunts the place. Rob and one of our bartenders, Colby, had locked the doors at 1 in the morning. They were sitting in the front room on the couch closest to the bar, talking and winding down from the evening. Colby is a tiny Italian girl in her 20s, cute as a bug, with large, dark, trusting eyes. And unfortunately, she was having guy trouble. She poured her heart out to Rob, who listened patiently. Colby did a bit of quiet sobbing, because, it's true, guys can be jerks at times. Rob pulled her in for a hug, and she leaned in gratefully. Then she stiffened in Rob's arms. "I can see a shadow on the pool table," she said in a fierce whisper. She sat up, shuddering. "And why is it so cold all of a sudden?" She rubbed her arms as she shivered. Both Rob and Colby are unyielding skeptics, but after Colby saw the shadow standing by the pool table, they were both left wondering if maybe her sobs had upset one of our resident spirits. They spent some time, these non-believers, trying to communicate with our ghost. Rob stood at the end of the bar, snapping pictures with Colby's cell phone, while Colby stood next to the pool table, encouraging the spirit to stand next to her. Nothing anomalous showed up in the pictures, although Colby says she saw the shadow again, this time hovering against the wall that forms the hallway that leads to the men's room. Eventually, Rob and Colby left for the evening. But they poured a shot glass full of whiskey and left it at the end of the bar as a friendly gesture for whoever it was Colby saw. Another group, Central Illinois Ghost Hunters, came in, a group that included a sensitive. It was during their visit that we discovered why the back hallway between the front room and the office was the source of such uneasy feelings. According to the medium, a woman had been seeing a man behind her husband's back. The husband came upon the couple in that back hallway, sharing a passionate embrace, and quickly learned the painful truth. He cold-cocked the man, laid him out on the floor, and hit the woman, too. The medium shook her head as she told us this story. "She's so sad. She's stuck here in the office, and she just paces or sits on the bed." The medium meant the bed that had been in the office decades ago when the argument took place. "I'm trying to get her to talk to me. I'm trying to tell her everything's okay now, but she's just ignoring me." This was, I think, more of a residual haunting rather than the intelligent spirits that hung around the place. It was this medium that told us about a couple of the spirits that regularly showed up. There was a stern man behind the bar, who was quite displeased that we were poking around after hours with our cameras and recorders. He crossly told the medium that they weren't circus animals there for our amusement. Another spirit, related somehow to the sour bartender, was a glamorous woman who apparently took a shine to one of the male investigators. She sat down next to him, the medium said, and playfully asked if he wanted to dance with her. The medium said the spirit was a bit of a barfly, a smoker, and that her flirting with the investigator was not helping the bartender's mood. The same medium, later in the evening, told us wistfully, "I've never seen so many spirits in one place. You've got ghosts from years and years, decades of history, and most of them are just wandering around oblivious of each other." People continued to have personal experiences with our spirits, even people who swear they don't believe in ghosts. I wrote up a post describing all of the things that happened in the bar. And as I was typing it up, I was sitting alone in the bar, watching the place while Rob ran an errand. The afternoon was warm, one of the first warm afternoons of the year, and I was wearing shorts. I was sitting at the bar with my bare knees touching the rough carpet that's tacked up to the bar. As I typed, the floor flexed behind me as if someone was walking across it. It flexed enough to bring my knees away from their contact with the rough surface. I whipped around to look, but of course there was no one there. I had announced to the ghosts after Rob had left that I was writing about them. Maybe somebody wanted to read over my shoulder as I worked. The cantina was our bar, but I didn't mind sharing it with a couple of friendly ghosts. Unfortunately, we no longer own the cantina, and the current owner is not the ghost-hunting sort. Sometimes I really wonder what our ghosts think of the place now, but I will always treasure the memories of the spirits that we met at the cantina. Thank you so much for tuning in. I look forward to being with you next time, and I hope you'll join me as we go lights out.